of Notre Dame football. 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
Who is dribbling?
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Bumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
It is week two of the quarantined Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. I'm coming to you like I do for Sports Beat, Budweiser's weekday sports beats from my den, office, whatever you want to call it, guest bedroom. It's a combination of all three. Evan Sharpley, where are you today?
I'm in the master bedroom. Got a little office here because my wife Jackie, she's working from home right now too on the TV side for WSBT. They're still doing some Facebook Live and trying to connect with their viewer base too. So I thought you were going to come across the air there with like a captain's log, you know, day 15
right.
Quarantine. I have seen no humans.
Stardate 327. that's exactly
kind of,
right.
That's the feel right now.
I have seen very few humans. Let's put it that way.
Well, I think that's the whole point. That's good on
exactly.
you for doing that.
Exactly. Exactly. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, of course, is presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing with four fruit flavors and just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar. It is Bud Light Seltzer in mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, and black cherry. It has been an interesting week, and again, this is kind of the end of the second full week that we have been doing, both in our market and around the country. Have been doing this as well, and hopefully everyone is staying safe out there. It has been interesting following the sports world, and I don't know about you, Evan, but just kind of people asking me, how do you do all these shows with no sports to talk about? We have actually had, though, a fairly steady, even though there's no actual sports going on, there's been sort of a fairly steady stream of sports-related things, whether it's the NFL draft, Major League Baseball, their season, their draft, some Notre Dame stuff that we'll get into. So we've at least had some things to kind of keep us going for the short term anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, you know, outside of the sports that would be going on right now, the ones that we're still looking to or talking about for later this year, I think most people are still very hopeful that schedule will continue and at least most of the off-season things, the NFL draft and free agency and whatnot, has continued to go on. You know, whether or not that comes to fruition in an actual season this fall, we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, unfortunately, the things that the topics that we do have are all about, we're kind of guessing or speculating to some extent. I guess, you know, we're always speculating when it comes to sports talk and things like that anyway. But I mean, there's a lot more speculation just in terms of what's going to happen. I think that's what is on everyone's minds right now. Is the NBA and the NHL going to be able to resume? Is Major League Baseball ever going to get started? If so, when? The NFL draft, and now it's kind of trickling into, even though it's far away, the NFL and college football seasons. And so we'll kind of start with that first from a more micro Notre Dame aspect. Notre Dame head football coach Brian Kelly joined Scott Van Pelt for a late night Sports Center appearance this week. Do you watch Van Pelt very much late at night, Evan?
No, usually maybe some replays and whatnot, but I don't, I mean, I'm basically just tuned into the streaming services right now, watching TV shows and movies.
I generally am, but during this situation, I've started watching Van Pelt more. I mean, I always liked him, like back in the day when he was on ESPN Radio, when it was SVP and Rosillo and those shows. But I found that he's had a pretty good slew of guests on, just kind of picking their brains, whether it's Brian Kelly, Rob Manfred, the Major League Baseball commissioner. He had Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, last night. And I like.
Well, he better have a good lineup of guests. These guys don't have anything else to do.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But he had Rob Manfred, the baseball commissioner, and Brian Kelly on the same night a couple nights ago. And so he talked with Kelly about how college football could be affected by COVID-19. And here's what Kelly had to say when Scott Van Pelt asked him, when's the latest college football teams can get started with summer workouts if they're going to be ready for the start of the season? Here's what Kelly said.
If you can't start training your football team by July 1, you're going to need at least 4 weeks. Strength and conditioning coaches are going to want six. You know, sports medicine is probably looking at 4 to 6 weeks. I think the realistic goal here is minimum of 4 weeks of conditioning before you put them in camp. You know, college football is going to be affected if we're not playing in 90 days in terms of the conditioning element and getting these young men ready.
So there you go, Brian Kelly again on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. What do you think, Evan? We're about 3 months away from July 1st. Based on what's going on now, how hopeful are you that teams are going to be working out together by then?
Sean, I mean, honestly, I don't know. I mean, like you said, it's it's speculation at this point. I mean, I think everyone's very hopeful, but we really just don't know. You know, what's going to happen, what the climate is going to be like. You know, are people taking this serious as it is? I really don't know. So I think most people, they would like to see that July 1st start date, and most even earlier than that, because, mm-hmm. you know, normally you're getting a June and July as you lead up to fall camp. But, I mean, at this point, we probably can flip a coin, to be honest with you, you know, whether or not that's actually going to happen. And really, you know, I think, you know, for Kelly, and the question was, what's the latest? I mean, that's still a pretty quick on-ramp if we're talking about July, and then you move into, you know, training camp in August and then start playing in September. That's a very quick timeline, especially given that, you know, most of these athletes now won't have had a strength and conditioning program going on in the spring, which really usually lays the foundation. Winter, spring really lay the foundation for peaking in the summer and then in the fall as well.
No, exactly. So, one, I guess, do you think, I think that if college football gets kind of the all clear sign sometime in June, that the NCAA is going to have to give them, because usually summer is non-contact, it is more about conditioning and things like that. I think the NCAA is going to have to give some kind of exemption to let them have actual practices at least for a week or two this summer, wouldn't you?
I think that will definitely 100% happen. You know, I mean, there's usually some skill work you can do. It's normally put on by the players, or it may even be, you know, the strength and conditioning staff, not that they're going to be instructing on skill, but when you have allotted time, you know, that's an opportunity maybe for 7-on-7, you know, or some things you're doing as a group. You know, the major focus really in the summer is that strength and speed and injury prevention too. So immediately for me, that comes to mind. So, you know, if these guys are coming back July 1 or later, you know, they're really going to be behind the eight ball in that area. And it's, you know, you can say that these guys, I mean, they're probably doing the best that they can with what they have right now as far as trying to be, you know, staying active, working on their skills, but it's not likely to be the same intensity. It's not likely to be the same attention to detail with coaches not necessarily looking over your shoulder. So, you know, I'm not going to go as far to say that the on-field product is going to suffer because everybody is in the same boat. But, you know, younger guys, early enrollees, guys in position battles, you know, they're certainly losing out here in the spring. So I think that the NCAA is, you know, if they are given the all clear, you're going to see summer practices to help acclimate these guys, because the biggest thing for me is their bodies not being ready to play with a month on ramp, you know, for games to start.
As someone, Evan, who's been through all this before, again, kind of going back to that July 1st date that Brian Kelly said, let's assume that's when they're able to get things started. As someone who has been through that, then what does need to be done in that month of July if it goes back that far as they get ready for training camp in August?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's what you heard Kelly say. You know, he listed the different groups and staffs, you know, whether it's the doctor side, and getting these players, if they have any bumps and bruises, healthy, you know, likely they're probably not going to come in with any issues if they're not doing too much. But then the strength and conditioning side, the speed and agility side, that aspect. And then certainly, you know, the skill portion of things, and getting these guys their chemistry and building that up. But for me, I mean, laying the foundation with injury prevention, you know, that's, and I know it's maybe not the fun thing to talk about, but you know, that really for me is if you rush into it, I think you may see more soft tissue injuries because yeah. These guys they're so used to going through, you know, every day you have something, that's in the winter and the spring too. That's not just, you know, summer and fall camp. And then once you start playing in the fall where it isn't every day, it really is, you know, it's a job. That happens year round. And right now, you know, it's uncharted territory. And these guys trying to come up with ways to stay active and in shape. So for me, that's the biggest thing is losing out on that foundation of coming into the season in really, really good shape. And we've seen, I mean, the Notre Dame strength and conditioning program, that coaching staff, they've done a tremendous job over the last few years of really setting the tone. So they're going to have to be creative. They're going to have to be unique. You know, fortunately, we live in the time right now where, you know, there's access to technology so you can stay connected right with the players. But still, you don't know what they have access to. So
well, and that's the thing. It's apparently they're communicating, you know, both that, you know, they have an app they can log on to. They have all these different things, but you know, when everyone's supposed to be self-quarantining and you're not supposed to be out at the gym, most of the gyms and stuff like that are closed down, not everybody has access to all this equipment mm-hmm. or at home, so it's still going to be fairly hit and miss, I would think.
Well, I mean, if you, for these guys right now, they just need to put on, you know, Rocky IV. I mean, all you really need
there
is
you need
is a barn. You know, that's all you need right there.
Couple feet of snow.
Perfect couple feet of snow, you know,
big hill.
Big boots on. Yeah. I mean, you'll be ready to go. Just, you know, chop a tree down and start doing some squat. Just with that bad boy, be ready for the season.
There you go. I mean, Stallone's had the answers for decades, you know. It's just a matter of if everybody can follow it or not, I guess. Well, you know, you said, Evan, that everyone's in the same boat, you know, in terms of missing spring practice. And I kind of, you know, I definitely agree with that. All these teams are in the same boat. You said you didn't think that the on-field product would be affected. Don't you think that it could still be, would it still be potentially a sloppy, or if these teams are able to go through fall training camp like they're supposed to, that kind of takes care of itself because you're there for about a month anyway before the season gets going?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, you know, I don't think that spring, you know, spring practice, I don't think, I don't know. spring practice is what
you can
it is,
say it. You can say it.
It's, I mean,
I know
okay,
what you're
me,
thinking.
It really is a waste of time, but that's when the team is there. Okay.
Yeah.
I think, and I've always thought, especially at the Division I level, when all these programs, the players, it's mandatory for them to be on campus in the summer. I think it would make much more sense to spread out even the training camp side of things. You know, you do so much in the spring and the summer to get strong. And then normally, at least how the schedule was set up 10 years ago, then you'd get into fall camp and, you know, it almost seemed like it was the coach's job to break you down then. And you felt going into the season a lot of times with how many two-a-days there were, you felt drained and tired. You know, that has changed because there are now limits on, you know, length of practice and how two-a-days are set up. And a lot of schools don't even do two-a-days anymore during the fall to try to make sure that the guys are peaking and ready to go once they're playing games. But, you know, for me, I would have loved kind of an on-ramp of, hey, let's hit a few practices in June and July and then really start to ramp it up. So that's why I think if there's the all clear, if there is a green light come June or July, I don't, if and the NCAA allows practicing, which I would assume they would, I think that this question goes away just because I think that, you know, with spring practice, it's you're there at school, so you're gonna take advantage of those. But I think it's more preferable to have practices, you know, in the early summer.
How much could a team like Notre Dame be affected, though? They have a new offensive coordinator with Tommy Reese. You know, anyone kind of in that same boat where he's kind of the guy in control of the offense for the first time, directing that. How much effect, you know, just losing the spring, could that have?
You know, maybe if you've got a guy coming in and bringing in an entirely new offense, this isn't, you know, this offense really isn't going to change much as far as the verbiage and, you know, kind of the X's and O's side of things. Most of that is going to be pretty fluid. You know, it's the offense that Tommy Reese ran with Brian Kelly. So a lot of, I think, that is just going to be rapport and understanding, you know, what's his play calling system going to be like. And really, if Tommy Reese is doing his job, it's going to be highlighting the skills of Ian Book. So that's more going to be a discussion on, hey, you know, Ian, where do you feel comfortable? What place would you like to, you know, see on the call sheet and work that way? So, you know, I would be more concerned if it was, you know, an outside hire and there's a brand new offensive scheme coming in.
Makes sense.
You want to be around those guys as much as possible. Really, with this, it's plug and play. It's going to be the same voices. It's going to be the same system.
All right, so the Irish are supposed to open the season against Navy August 29th, of course, in Dublin, Ireland. So if they can't play there, where do you think that game should ultimately be played?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say I doubt that they're going to be playing there. I really don't think so. And I saw today Kirk Herbstreit, he doesn't think that, or he thinks that there's a chance that the NCAA football season might not go on at all this fall. and that may be, you know, a complete one side where, you know, that's kind of devil's advocate, and it may be. But I don't know. Why not lace it up in the new, indoor football facility? They got a pretty nice spot there.
Hey, there you go.
I mean, outside of it being in South Bend, I mean, I figure that's probably where it's going to be. I know normally you look at a neutral site facility when you're playing Navy most of the time, unless it's in South Bend. But I don't know. I'd probably put my money on right now at this point it being at Notre Dame Stadium if they are playing.
I think that would make sense. And even though Navy's home facility is very small, the Navy Marine Corps facility, I mean, if this lingers and they get the season started, I have to think there's a good chance you might be playing a couple games without anybody in the stands, for that matter. So, I mean, the size of the stadium isn't going to matter.
Correct. And that might be, a unique venue then, because normally you don't play at Navy. But I know I've seen some athletic directors, you know, asking their staffs to be creative and maybe go through the process of what it might look like to play 10 games or lose a couple games at home, play with no game, you know, with no fans in the stands. I mean, it's a real discussion on the table right now because, again, we really don't know how long this may last.
Yeah. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. A lot of different topics to get to over the course of today's show. And as we kind of continue this theme on whether or not the college football season will start, USA Today columnist Dan Wolkin had an interesting column that he had earlier this week, and I'm going to read part of it to you. He says that it's time for college football coaches, you know, on this subject of whether or not the season is going to start, that college football coaches need to be more vocally involved to help slow down the spread of COVID-19. And here is the quote from the piece that Dan Wolkin wrote at USA Today this week. Only college football coaches have the ability to deliver a message that will scare everyone straight. If we don't get this thing under control, the 2020 season could be in trouble. Is that dramatic? Yes. But for a lot of people who are still resistant to the idea of social distancing during these crucial days and weeks ahead, it might be the only threat that sinks in. It also happens to be true. While most of us are under the impression that things will generally return to normal this summer and the college football season will kick off on schedule, the lack of certainty about what the country is going to look like in August and September is the elephant in the room for every athletics director. He went on to say, coaches have an opportunity to make a real impact. The message is simple, direct, and easy to digest. Slowing the spread of COVID-19 and thus having a football season depends on everyone complying with social distancing. In certain parts of the country, having that public service announcement come from a college football coach would reach a whole bunch more people than a politician or doctor could. That's end quote, and that is an excerpt from Dan Wolkin's column in USA Today. And he had originally said in that column that Nick Saban was one of the coaches who had not delivered anything like that. Saban did put out something earlier this week to Alabama fans. Dabo Swinney, another one. Dan Mullen, Notre Dame's Brian Kelly, one of the ones that he mentioned. I know Brian Kelly is, you know, kind of doing some things with Notre Dame's own social media and things like that. But, Evan, when you hear that, what do you think? Do you buy or sell what Wolkin is saying?
I buy. I mean, he's not wrong. I mean, you have guys that are leaders of an entire fan bases that, and you know, in some cases are very regional, and in others, you know, specifically even Notre Dame is you know, national and global, with the number of people that follow it. And plus, I think at least in my head, you know, you have so many political heads talking and saying this right now. I'd say for the general public at this point, it'd probably be a breath of fresh air to have a college football coach go up there and talk. You know, whether or not you're going to heed the advice, I don't know, you know, but I don't think it hurts. I mean, I don't think it hurts to have guys in positions of power, who are leading programs and do, I mean, they do, they have a powerful voice. You know, when these guys get up there, whether you like them or not, you're likely going to listen. But you'll probably still have the crowd as saying, you know, shut up and dribble or focus on sports. You know, you may, but you know, again, this being so different than anything that we've ever experienced in life and, you know, specifically for us in talking in the sports world, it affects all these guys too.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for them to use their platform, and at least, you know, say something.
Well, look, The bottom line is we have become such a politically divisive country that who you are choosing to believe when it comes to information right now has a lot to do with which political party you affiliate with. And I'm not going to touch either side of that, but it's just, I mean, that's
well,
what it
is.
Isn't
that the most frustrating part right now?
No, it is. And so that's what he's saying is if you're going to listen to a politician on, you know, which side of the aisle that politician happens to be listened to, you're probably not going to listen to him. But when you're talking about these fan bases, they touch both sides of the aisle. A football coach can hit both sides of the aisle because at least in theory, he's not politically, you know, he's not politically motivated. He's motivated by what's going to serve his team and his sport and everything the best. And I think that I've said this before that I think a lot of these coaches, just from facial, you know, recognition, the diehard fan base of these different programs, especially when you're talking about smaller, you know, college football communities tend to be smaller communities around the country. And a lot of these ones that he's singling out in the South, I think that people would tend to recognize these specific coaches, whether it's Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney, Lincoln Riley. If you held a picture of one of those coaches up and you held up a picture of their mayor or their senator or whoever it happens to be, I think they're going to recognize the college football coach and they're going to put a lot more stock into what they say. And Ed Orgeron and LSU have actually been very out front with this whole thing. Not just Ed Orgeron, but the other coaches in the LSU program. They've got billboards around Baton Rouge and around the state of Louisiana encouraging people to keep their distance, to socially distance and do their part in the whole thing. So I absolutely think that what these college football coaches say would go a long way in at least helping it. I don't think you're going to convince 100% of anybody in any argument, but I do think that it would go a long way if these guys were more out front with this stuff.
Go Tigers.
There you go. All right, so Evan, as we sit here today, scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you the season's going to start on time?
Man, I'm just going to sit right in the middle. I'm going to be right on that fence. I'm going to say a 5.
50-50?
No, I'm sticking with it. Unless you've got that double-sided, you know, quarter where we're calling heads, I'm going to sit right at 50. I don't know. I really don't. I really don't.
I might be a little bit below that at a 4 just based on the fact that the curve is going up, that the U.S. has passed both China and Italy in terms of reported cases, and that curve is not coming back down yet. And I think it's going to be tough for it's going to be tougher for college football to start than the NFL, I think, because college football to start, and I think Herb Street might have said this as well, people have to be going to class. They're, you know, school has to be in session. You've got to have people on campus together. At least in the NFL, it's not quite the same situation. And college football relies much more on people coming through the gates than the NFL does, because the NFL has that massive TV contract. So because of what it's going to take to get the kids back on campus, to get them in some kind of training camp, to not have to put themselves at a higher risk of injury just going into practices and things like that, I sit a little bit below 50-50 at a 4, I think, right now.
So you're saying that if you're at a 4, what we could possibly just do then is push everything just to restart in 2021 in March, starting with March Madness. Is that what you're saying?
There you go. I hope it doesn't come to that, but my goodness. I mean, we've got a lot of other things that we're going to get to just in terms of what might start, what might not, and how it all might be handled. Let me ask you a fun question, though, to wrap up this segment. Something that has been kind of going around this week. What is your favorite Notre Dame football moment that you have watched on TV, and what's your favorite Notre Dame football moment that you saw in person? And obviously, this can include your playing days as well.
This came from our good friend Tyler James, correct?
I think that's probably who originated it,
And I think, too, I for sure have answered the my favorite one that I saw in person, and it's Brady Quinn to Jeff Samardzija against UCLA.
UCLA, okay.
That was my, I mean, I was on the sideline for that. And, you know, I was a part of some pretty cool experiences, you know, being there on the sideline for Bush as a freshman, even though we lost. You know, there were some great moments there, but I don't know, that play from Quinn to, you know, from Quinn to Shark was a pretty cool moment.
Yep.
I don't know. I guess I don't really know, which one is my favorite that I watched on TV. You know, I grew up watching college sports, but, you know, Notre Dame really wasn't on my radar until I was in high school. Get recruited. So I don't think I had one, you know, growing up post playing. You know, there's been some pretty fun ones to watch, but I don't know. I think the ones that stuck with me are the ones when I was on the field, either experienced them playing or, you know, on the sideline watching them.
It's interesting because Darren Pritchett had the same one that you picked, Quinn to Samardzija 2006 against UCLA, but that was his TV moment because he told a fun story about that was prior to WSBT having the Notre Dame contract. So he was doing a post-game show, but he couldn't do it at the stadium or on campus because of the contractual things. So he had to leave late in the third quarter, run across the parking lot from the football stadium to X Stadium, the baseball stadium, where he had a bike, and then he got on the bike and pedaled off to wherever they were doing their post-game show. And so he watched that play on a small TV screen right before they did their post-game show.
That's an awesome story.
It is. That's a really awesome. I was on the sideline because at, you know, the last, what is it, 4 or 5 minutes of the game, the media gets to go down on the field before going to the, you know, post-game interview rooms and all that stuff. So I was on the sideline at around the 10 or 15-yard line as Samardzija came racing by me, scoring that game-winning touchdown in the closing seconds against the Bruins. So that was definitely a great one.
I'll say, though, something's not adding up now. Do you think Darren, when he went to ECK, maybe took my bike that I had there?
Did you have a bike go missing back in the day?
It came up missing. You know, there were a couple in the trees. I had a couple that were ended up in the trees too. But man, that weekend, I don't know. Darren might have swiped my bike that weekend.
He might have. I'll just my favorite TV moment was the Notre Dame Miami 1988 game and the plays Pat Terrell made in that game specifically stand out. Terrell had a pick six on Steve Walsh in that game, and then of course he broke up the 2-point conversion when Jimmy Johnson decided to go for two that sealed the 31-30 victory for Notre Dame. So that was my biggest TV moment, I think. And then in terms of in person, this October it's going to be 20 years. Notre Dame defeated Air Force. It was late October in 2000. I had just moved here that week to start covering Notre Dame. So that was my first game, Notre Dame Air Force. And the big moment came. Time was expiring at the end of regulation. Air Force was teeing up for what would have been a game-winning 28-yard field goal, which is basically an extra point. But Glenn Earl for Notre Dame comes off the edge. He blocks a 28-yard field goal as time expires at the end of regulation. The game goes to overtime, and Joey Getherall scored the game-winning touchdown. Earl wasn't supposed to come off the edge. He was supposed to stay home in case of a fake, but he helped Notre Dame win, and of course they went on to a Fiesta Bowl that year as well.
Yes, they did.
All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, we've got both some NFL draft talk, some NFL season talk, some Major League Baseball draft talk, some Major League Baseball season talk as well. There's a lot going on for both of those different sports right now in terms of what's going to happen for them. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. We're presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing with four fruit flavors, just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, and less than a gram of sugar. It's Bud Light Seltzer in mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, and black cherry. More Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley after this. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with former Notre Dame quarterback Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. Don't forget, Budweiser's weekday sports beat comes your way from 5 until 7 o'clock tonight on WSBT. We've got more NFL-related stuff, not more NFL-related, but some NFL-related stuff that I want to get to. The big topic of conversation right now in terms of the NFL, Evan, is the draft. And NFL teams not allowed inside their team headquarters for the next 2 weeks. Well, meanwhile, the draft is supposed to start in 4 weeks. General managers want to postpone the draft, but Roger Goodell says, nope, we are going forward as scheduled. What do you think about the whole situation?
I don't know. I mean, it's strange, right? You know, you have NFL teams are not allowed inside their team headquarters, but the draft is going to continue to start. I guess my question on this is, hopefully these guys know how to use Zoom or Skype or FaceTime, right? I mean, you're going to have to be creative and figure it out. You know, you're not going to have your prototypical war rooms, as they called it, for drafts. I mean, it's going to be very different. So, you'll quickly see, you know, the teams that did their scouting and due diligence, because you're not going to have as much time leading up to. But, maybe teams won't overthink it as much, as far as, you know, all of the pro days and just kind of the, I guess, the dog and pony show that's the combine and after that. Hopefully these guys have who they want and they're ready to get things rolling. I don't know. There's still so much uncertainty. So I think you'll get both sides of it. People that want it to go on for the sake of, hey, we don't have any sports, give us something. But at the same time, you know, just with it being so unique and right now teams not allowed for another 2 weeks and possibly more than that, you know, the question is how are we supposed to have a draft when we're not even around each other?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, one of the ideas that people were saying was, well, if they can't get in their headquarters, they can just go rent one of those rooms at a hotel, you know, like a, what do you call it? Like a banquet room or whatever at a hotel. Well, they've still got to be around each other. So I don't know exactly what that's accomplishing. And I think the biggest thing that you hear from the general managers, because they actually had a committee on it, and they voted fairly resoundingly in that committee that they wanted to postpone. But Roger Goodell is just being bullheaded about this, it seems like, which he's, you know, known to do about a lot of things. But they're concerned that there haven't been pro days, and because of everyone being quarantined and shut down, travel, you know, no one's able to travel, and you can't go meet these people in person. So they, you know, there's things like physicals, psychological testing, just getting more information on players and being able to see some of these guys, you know, at their pro days. They're not going to have as much information on these teams. And you know, so they're, and for that matter, apparently, on the coasts like New York, New Jersey, Los Angeles, Seattle, those are where the cases of COVID-19 are more prevalent right now. You've got a lot more cases. So even in 2 weeks, it's pretty likely that teams in those markets are not going to be able to get back in their headquarters, while other teams might actually be able to. So there's, you know, there's a disadvantage that the general managers talked about from one team to another, you know, just based on what market that you have happened to be in. So it doesn't seem like, with a month to go, it doesn't seem like Roger Goodell should be sort of banging his fist the way he is about insisting that this goes on exactly when it's going to.
Yeah, I mean, the easier thing is, you know, say, hey, we'll reevaluate it as we get closer, because there's not going to be people there. There's not going to be the fanfare of it. Right. I mean, and it's, you know, it's likely that there are going to be, you know, parts and aspects of the NFL season that are pushed. I mean, what's the hurry to get these guys drafted? It's not like they're going to show up and, you know, start rookie minicamp by any means until, you know, the remnants of this go away, however long that may take. So I guess I'm not really sure what the rush is. But again, if you're going to do it, Zoom, Skype, and FaceTime, baby.
I mean, what it's going to be. I mean, there's going to be a lot of video conferencing, just like we see on any of the sports debate shows that you watch right now. You've got the split screens, you know, because they're doing it just like we're doing. We're doing an audio version of it, but these guys are doing split screens, and they're video streaming themselves from their man caves or wherever they happen to be. And that's what these NFL guys are going to have to do as well.
I think if there's a few things that we'll learn during this time is how many meetings could have been an email, and then what aspects of certain businesses can potentially be done remote.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of the business side, you know, coming out on this, is there's going to be updates and changes. There's probably going to be some pretty cool and unique ideas from some bright people on, I'm serious, you know, on that could change certain industries.
I wasn't laughing at what you were saying when you started to talk about, you know, with just the community meetings online and things like that. My son sent me it was like a quick 30 seconds of a Zoom meeting, and there was like a screen full of, you know, like 10 people on screen, and these people are talking, and they were kind of joking around going, hey, make sure everyone's got their clothes on. And then all of a sudden this guy walks in. He didn't even realize his computer was on, and he's in his birthday suit. So,
oh man,
we might be finding out more about each other than we want to.
Yeah, there you go.
Real quick final thought on this draft thing. I have an Adam Schefter of ESPN floated an idea this week. There's 7 rounds of the draft. He says do it 7 rounds in 7 days. So you've got 1 round per night, and of course it's on TV. What do you think about that idea?
Is this just to make more money? Is that the point?
I think that part of it is, again, going back to the lack of information a lot of teams are going to have on different players. You space it out a little bit more, so you have 1 draft in 1 night, then everyone gets, you know, 21 hours essentially to regroup, gather their information, come back to the table, and, you know, with whatever they need to do, and then you lather, rinse, repeat over the course of 7 days. Since teams are going to have less information essentially on these potential draft picks than ever before. It gives them more time in between rounds and in between picks to you know, to kind of put together a plan for what they want to do rather than being rushed over the course of 3 days.
I'll tell you what, you really want people to tune in. Just have it auto-select using, like, Madden.
The fantasy draft?
line it up, you know, enter these guys' names in, and we'll just let them select. You know, you get whoever the computer picks for you.
Well, and, you know, from a TV standpoint, with no live sports going on right now and as big as the NFL is, I think it would be a boom for ESPN and the NFL Network as well to do it over the course of, you've got 2 to 3 hours a night for 7 straight days.
Yeah, you'd have to do 2 things, because when you get towards those lower rounds, you know, people may start to tune out. You need to have Pat McAfee be the commentator.
I've got no problem with that.
Line that up, and then you're going to have some type of, you know, prop bets and different things going on to entertain in between picks.
You could get that Joey Molinaro kid who's going viral with all these impersonations that he does. He had a great Nick Saban last week. Did you see that one?
Yeah, he's got that. He's got Ed down pretty good too. The Andrew Luck's pretty solid as well. Jim Irsay is pretty good too.
We'll have to get a couple of those for next week, I think.
Yeah, him and Frank Caliendo, they've been doing a lot of they partnered up on a few deals. They've been pretty funny.
Some joint stuff, absolutely. All right, we'll take our final timeout. When we come back, Major League Baseball. What's going to happen there? When is Major League Baseball going to be able to start? Are they going to be able to start? And when they do get started, what's it going to look like? We'll address all that and more from Evan Sharpley's point of view. And, of course, he wasn't just a Notre Dame football player. He was also a Notre Dame baseball player who played in the professional ranks for a few years. So he'll have some good insights on that as well when we return. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch, presented by Bud Light Seltzer in mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, and black cherry. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Yeah. Can you feel it, baby?
So it turns out our producer, Jesse, prefers Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch over the Beastie Boys.
Come on, who doesn't? Let's go.
It's kind of like seeding these sports movies and such. We have a new sports movie madness bracket challenge. 64 sports movies up on our website at WSBTradio.com. You can cast your vote. I'm going to tell you right away, I take exception with some of the seating in this challenge.
And you would know, because you host a sports movie watching podcast.
That's right. Two guys talking sports movies. And we haven't put out a new one in a couple of weeks. We were actually going to do something bracket related last week, which was going to coincide with the first week of the tournament. And since we have been quarantined, we have had a hard time with the technical aspects with Bobby Hensley and I, but I am going to have a guest co-host starting next week for at least a few episodes Two Guys Talking Sports Movies. Fever Pitch is going to be our podcast next week. Have you ever seen that one?
I have not.
Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore, centered around the 2004 Boston Red Sox. It's a solid movie. I wouldn't give it, you know, a 1 or a 2 seed by any means, but good rom-com centered around baseball fandom. All right, let's get a couple baseball topics in here real quick, Evan. Bill James, longtime sabermetrics guru, has picked the date he thinks Major League Baseball is going to begin. He's going with May 15th. What's your best guess right now?
Sean, I have no idea. How did he come up with that? Did he plug it into some magical formula? I don't know. I mean, if people stop going outside, then maybe it's May 15th. But again, this is another one where I just that'd be great.
It would be great.
I'm saying no.
Yeah, I think we're going to be really, really lucky if we got May 15th at this point. I'm going. Probably about a month and a half after that is my best guess. I'm looking at the end of June as opposed to anywhere in May or early June, because no matter when they decide that they can get going again, they're going to need probably at least 3 weeks, if not 4 weeks, to get back to spring training to get ready for the season before they ever get going. So I think it's going to be on the longer side than the shorter side, unfortunately.
I agree. I'm with you there.
Okay, Brian Windhorst covers the NBA for ESPN, and he had something interesting the other day. He said the way China got its basketball league restarted after they had quarantined and shut everything down due to COVID-19 was they essentially brought all the teams in and played in one city. So my question for you, Evan, as we apply this potentially to baseball, as someone who went to spring training, played professional baseball, how feasible do you think it would be for Major League Baseball teams to not only go to spring training, but potentially open their seasons in a cluster of spring training sites?
Well, I mean, it could work. You know, in Arizona, you know, there's a cluster of complexes there around.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they're playing spring training games. And, you know, when I was there for extended spring training, you were able to travel and play. I mean, it's kind of a 30-mile radius, I guess, of teams there in Arizona. And there's going to be some in Florida too, similar. So it's not outside the question. I mean, I guess, you know, my thought would be in kind of response to, you know, what China did with their basketball league is, I guess, you know, what city would that be in the U.S. where you could do that? Where you're playing in one meet, but you could potentially open up the, you know, the problem of infecting people in that area that didn't have any.
Yeah.
As well. So I don't know. I don't, you know, if there's no rush, and at this point, I don't think there should be. I think you got to make sure that you're having discussions on, you know, what's going to be the best move for everybody here. But it certainly could happen, doing it at a cluster of spring training sites. That would definitely be on the table.
What's interesting is if you look at the world map in terms of COVID-19 cases, Miami and Houston are relatively COVID free right now. Two very big cities, you know, southern and warmer weather cities. So, you know, those potentially, and you've got a dome stadium there in Houston. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how creative they get, because Rob Manfred did say the other day they're going to have to get really creative and be pretty flexible with a lot of things. One of those things that they're going to have to be creative with is potentially double headers, because depending on when they get started, they're going to want to get more games in. And one of the ideas being floated is more double headers, and specifically 7-inning double headers is something that came up this week. And when Manfred was on Scott Van Pelt, SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, Van Pelt asked him about 7-inning double headers, and Manfred interestingly did not say no. He said, you know, that his general stance has always been you've got to play a 9-inning game, but because of the situation we're in, he's really not sure about the idea of 7-inning doubleheaders. So what do you think about that?
I think we should ask Trevor Bauer. I think instead of Manfred being on all these shows, Trevor Bauer should come up and he should say what they should do. But, I mean, I can tell you this, you know, people are already complaining about games being long, so let's play 14 or 18 innings in a day.
Yeah.
I mean, are you serious?
There you go. Well, you know, are they going to be split doubleheaders like they currently do, where you've got a day-night doubleheader kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm sure players are going to love doing that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think so. I'm okay with shortening the season. I don't think players would be disappointed with that. Again, I mean, they are going to have to be creative here. They're going to have to, you know, push it out as long as you really need. I mean, you know, most of these guys, I mean, they're playing, they're usually playing year round. I mean, you're taking maybe a month off, but there are winter leagues that are being played in Venezuela, Dominican. You know, there are pro guys that go and play in those leagues during what is quote unquote their off season. So some of these guys may only take a month off, of actual playing games. So, I don't know. The day night doubleheader, it doesn't, you know, unless you're Ernie Banks, it doesn't really appeal to me. And I don't think appeals to the players and the product that's playing now.
Yeah.
The seven inning thing, maybe, but then, I mean, are we playing, this isn't college baseball, you know, this isn't high school baseball.
No, it's true.
I think that you'd have purists, and I think that you'd have a lot of players too say, well, you know, you only give us seven innings. I mean, overall at bats would go down. So I don't know how well that would be received. I think there'd be pushback there. I think most players would say, you know, shorten the season if you must. And if you want to do, you know, if it's one doubleheader a week, or, you know, you'd have to come up with a good way to do it where there's not going to be a lot of pushback.
Yeah. And I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. And I do think that the players generally don't like the idea. Taxing pitching staffs is the biggest concern, I think, when you look at the possibility of doubleheaders. And I think that's the reason, you know, would seven innings help? Because you're lopping potentially four innings off, you know, if you're playing two games in one day like that, especially if you're playing multiple doubleheaders in a week, you know. So I agree. I don't think players are necessarily going to like it, but we're all in a situation where there's so much going on that none of us want to have to do, but it's, you know, everyone's got to find a way to kind of make the best of a crazy situation right now in whatever sport that you happen to be talking about. All right, Evan Sharpley, what's next for you?
I don't know. I've got a lot of time on my hands to figure it out, you know. Ozark season 3 came out, so I might have to watch that today.
Is it out right now?
Yeah, and right now, of course, the big thing that's taking streaming services by storm is Tiger King.
I've heard about that. I haven't watched it yet.
Is Sean, it is, you won't believe that it is real.
All right.
I mean, it is so unbelievable. You watch Tiger King.
All right.
We could do a whole episode on, you and I could do a whole episode on Tiger King.
Tiger King recap coming up next week.
There we go. Perfect.
Sounds good. Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley, presented by Bud Light Seltzer, light and refreshing, four fruit flavors, mango, strawberry, lemon, lime, black cherry, just 100 calories, 2 grams of carbs, less than a gram of sugar. It is Bud Light Seltzer. Evan, I will talk to you next week when we do our Tiger King recap, WSBT South Bend.